Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we have a subject that I hope none of you ever have to go through, this kind of a situation, but it's about a lawsuit. It's about a very unique situation that members of a family had to go through. The book is titled The Inventor's Fortune Up for Grabs, but it's also about dealing with trusts, how do you want your legacy to be handled, and the authors of this book, Suzanne G. Bayer and John Farr, just did an incredible job. Suzanne is a member of the family that was involved with this issue, and then John was one of the attorneys. Suzanne, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. My name is German, and it's pronounced Bayer.
Well, thank you for correcting me. I appreciate that. So it's a good German girl. Okay.
There you go.
There we've got it. All right. Now, Suzanne, this is a most interesting story. This is about a $7 million fortune, and this may not be the exact sum. I realize that you didn't give out the exact numbers in the book, and that's okay.
Right.
But this was a fortune that was left behind by a Rhode Island inventor and jewelry magnate, Art Hadley, and his wife, Frances. Tell us, first of all, what it was that he invented, and secondly, about this particular trust that he left.
Well, the invention, you know, he died several years before I was born, so the only way I could find out anything about my great-uncle Art Hadley was through my grandmother, his sister. And apparently Art Hadley was very unlike the rest of the family, which were proper British, they're from South Africa, very proper upbringing. And Art Hadley was, from what I hear, a womanizer. He loved his bootleg booze, and he drove his fast sports cars. And this was in the Depression and before. However, in my research, I found out he was a creative genius. And he invented the expansion bracelet, which is worn today as an expansion watch band.
Mm-hmm.
And the bracelet, when he first invented it, soldiers in World War I wore timepieces in their pockets, and when they jumped into foxholes, they'd break. So this invention of the expansion bracelet was terrific, that they could put their timepiece right on the bracelet and, you know, avoid the breakage of that.
Mm-hmm.
So Hadley Roma Company today is the largest manufacturer of the expansion watch band. So it is definitely still in existence today, this wonderful expansion bracelet invention.
Incredible.
And that's the invention that got us these millions. Okay, you want to know about the trust.
Yeah,
there were,
how did this all, this, he died, he had never had children of his own.
No, Art Hadley did. He had two children.
Oh, he did have two children. Okay.
Yes. Thomas
he did
and,
have two children.
Yes, Thomas and Sarah.
Okay.
He had two children. And Sarah had no children, and she was not married. And Thomas had was married, and he adopted his wife's two children from a former marriage 13 years into his marriage. And they were now 30-year-old women with families of their own, and one was divorced.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to back up just a little bit. My cousins and brother and I received a letter from a Rhode Island attorney, and this is what started all of this. You know, we didn't know Art Hadley had these big trusts.
Mm-hmm.
And the letter began with a sentence, "You have been determined to be an heir at law of Arthur Hadley." And I knew he invented something, so I was figuring, oh my goodness, this guy's got some big bucks. And we all got pretty excited, but I read further into this letter, and it said, "At this time, we believe it is unlikely that you will be inheriting under the Hadley Trust." And that's when I thought, oh, whoosh, easy come, easy go. There goes
mm-hmm.
the fortune up in
mm-hmm.
flames. But one of my cousins said, hey, let's not go down without a fight. Let's go get a second opinion. And that's what we did. That's we went on the Martindale and Hubbell online lawyer directory, and I went down and looked for Rhode Island trust and estate lawyers, and there he was, John S. Farr. And I clicked my mouse on him.
Well, what I find interesting is that neither Thomas nor Sarah had children between them.
Right.
And then there were two trusts that he left, one for the lifetime of his wife, and after her death, in trust for the lives of, you know, or Art did this. He left one for his wife and then for his two children. And that at the deaths of Sarah and Thomas, the two trusts would end and the assets would be distributed to the children of Thomas and Sarah.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah, so here you've got something, and Art Hadley did a good job. He's the inventor. This is what he did. What was the, if you will, the confusion with his trust? That's the word I'll use, because there was a lot here that John had to work with. He literally made steps for changing the laws regarding trusts in the state of Rhode Island.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, there was a similar case, but it actually went from, it was called a direct inheritance, where an older woman hires her gardener and adopts her gardener, who's an adult. And that's a direct inheritance, and that had no problem at all of getting all of her money.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what John calls an indirect inheritance, where it didn't go from Art to somebody that he chose. It went through his son to somebody, to two people he had never met, didn't know about. So here we were, the bloodline, which was 11 of us cousins and my brother and myself, versus these two adopted women of Art's son.
Mm-hmm.
And this made for very confusing. And apparently in one of the trusts were worded just a little bit differently. So this was going to cause a lot of confusion on what was Art Hadley's intent.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what John Farr had to figure out beautifully. He did a beautiful job.
Well, the confusing thing is, how in the world are you ever going to know somebody's intent? Art Hadley had been dead for a number of years.
Yeah, exactly. He died in 1941 at 56 years old.
So here you have this situation after the children died, and you had this confusion. And what's the difference between the adoptees and the blood relatives? I shared something of this with a person, and they said, well, who cares? If he adopted them, they have a right to get certain monies, and as well as the blood relatives. Now, it all depends on what's left, but if you don't have that discriminating statement in a will in some way, you're going to have these kinds of things evolve. What was the biggest challenge that John had to face in dealing with these issues?
Well, you know, there's a couple of challenges here. One, going back to Art's children, Thomas and Sarah,
mm-hmm.
My oldest cousin Cindy knew Sarah very well. And Sarah, before she died, said to Cindy, watch out for the trusts. She felt her brother Thomas was quite diabolical and that he would do everything and anything he could to get it into the hands of himself and these two adult adopted daughters that, frankly, nobody in the family even knew about.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a challenge, but there was more challenges. One of the group of cousins, there were 11 total, there were two who stuck their feet in the ground and said, you know, we are bloodline and family should get all of great Uncle Art Hadley's trust.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the remaining nine felt, no, let's just share this. Let's share it with the adopted women and with whomever else comes out of the woodwork, which a lot of them did.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just just really fine to do the sharing. But these two cousins said, no, we want it all. And that, I really feel, was John's biggest challenge, because this could have been settled within a year and a half. And whenever there came opportunity, like right before it went to trial court, we had an opportunity to settle. And the two cousins said, no, we're not going to do this. We deserve, Bloodline deserves all. So then that was thrown into the Rhode Island Supreme Court. And right before then, the wonderful thing is, I've learned so much. Before you go to the Supreme Court, you do mediation. That's what they encourage you to do. Mm-hmm. And again, the two cousins would not, you know, here was a second opportunity to settle. How many opportunities does one get in a lifetime? Mm-hmm. And they stuck their foot deep in the sand again and didn't want to settle. So this went on for 6 years.
Oh, my goodness. So when you hear these stories and when you understand the due process as it is, and some other things that went on, the process that you have to go through, because this was a unique situation, and the reality is law is never perfect, not ever. And something maybe that was written in the 1800s or the early 1900s may not be applicable to certain things in the 21st century, dependent on circumstances. And it's really a challenge, I think, for an attorney to go through all of the variables. And, of course, you need a team. And John was fortunate enough. He knew some very, very good people, and they were very honest people. And with his portion of the book, when he explains what he's going through in the due process, I had a great deal of respect for the ways that he expressed the details and information in a way the layperson can understand it.
Exactly. And, you know, I did not understand really what was going on until we got to write this book, and John and I wrote it separately. I did my part first, and then he did mm-hmm. his part. He would send me chapters through the mail, and I would sit down on my couch with my feet up and start reading, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this went on behind the scenes? Mm-hmm. I had not a clue, and the way he explained it, I just thought I was reading this fabulous best-selling novel. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, this was our case? So you are absolutely right. He explains everything so beautifully in layman's terms that you can understand. He even provided a glossary at the end of the book, which I absolutely love. He doesn't think anybody will refer to it, but I think it's kind of neat.
Well, I think what he's done in addition to that, it's going by the beginning date of when Arthur Art Hadley was born in South Africa, which was May 25, 1885. Then going all the way through to the very end when things finally were settled, which was September 15th, 2009. So you have all of these time frames that he's itemized out, and that takes a lot of organization, but it also makes it easier to sort of follow what was going on here, and it shows how individuals can hold legal systems up big time, and that the mediation that was suggested was very, very valuable and viable. And then to have Ron and Wilma, your two cousins, decide, I think those were the two people.
Those are the two cousins, yes.
And what was sort of sad to me is that Wilma was sometimes on your side and say, gee, I'm going to settle, I don't want to do this. Ron never did change it. He fought till the very end, and of course he lost because the court looked at it, the Supreme Court looked at it and said, we're not going to even go through this. This has all been taken care of. Everything is in order, and it was the due process. And I'm sure that he was just devastated, but it is a very valuable lesson because he and Wilma represented themselves in court, and they didn't understand all of the nuances, although they learned a great deal in the process.
They learned a great deal, and I think John had a lot of respect for them and how they handled themselves. But really, it was mostly on an emotional level that they tried to persuade the courts, not on a legal level. you know, I felt very badly for them in the end. They both have families, and I don't know how much money they spent flying back and forth to, you know, trials and things. And I just, you know, I was really angry with them during the process because we could have settled this.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one elderly cousin who was quite sick and who really needed the money. And
that was Cindy.
That was Cindy. And I would write these letters to Ron and Wilma, you know, trying to influence them, you know, please let's settle and here are the reasons why. Letters to persuade, I'll put it that way. And
mm-hmm.
obviously that just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote a couple letters, and I got terrific letters back from Ron, but nope, he wasn't going to budge at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Wilma, according to one of my cousins, she followed him. She really adored him as a kid, and I think this kind of just went into adulthood, and I never heard from her.
Mm-hmm.
So here they are. You're right. Here they are left with nothing, and then the rest of us settled.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and everything was put into order, and Cynthia Ruth Gay.
Cynthia, yes. Yes. She was my favorite cousin. Yep.
Yeah. And she just, she didn't want anybody to give up on what needed to be done, but regrettably, she died from a serious illness and did not live to see any of her portion. But I know everybody in the family had been pulling for settlement because she needed the money. I mean, her medical bills were just going through the ceiling.
Yeah, she had no savings. She was the poorest one of all of us, and she was in the worst health. She was the oldest one of us all. And she was the most enthusiastic in the beginning. She was the one who said, hey, let's not go down without a
mm-hmm.
fight. Let's get hold of a lawyer. I mean, in fact, she was the point person. Now, John made it real clear. I mean, here was poor John with 11 people going to descend on him every day with all these emails. I mean, he had to organize this somehow. So he wanted a point person, and we appointed Cindy. And
mm-hmm.
she just did a marvelous job. She would collect all of our questions and then send one email to John with all the questions. And it was it worked beautifully. And then when she started going downhill, she had to give up the position to
mm-hmm.
our other cousin, Wendy. And then, yeah, Cindy, she didn't make it, and she never saw any of this, and she was the one who started it. So, yeah, this was devastating for me. She was definitely my favorite.
One of the comments that John makes in his portion of the book, and I like the idea that you're expressing information relative to those of you that were in this case, and then John, as the attorney representing your group, and he naturally would not have represented Ron and Wilma. They had to do their own thing, even though they were part of the family members that were going to be recipients. They chose to take a different positioning, so they had to have their own representation. But one of the comments he said is that he had experiences of serendipity. That's the word that he used, where he felt like he was being led by someone or something that he just couldn't explain. That it was just like it was there. He said it was almost like Art Hadley was saying, okay, let's get this settled. This is how you do it. And I found that fascinating, coming from someone that is what I'd call so left brain, that would be the last thing you'd ever expect them to express in a book.
Very conservative, yes. And he did. He felt, in fact, I think he wrote this, that he felt like he was the ghostwriter for Art Hadley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no pun intended there.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, and several times he would get a feeling. When he made up a case at one time, he said, well, let's make a scenario. And then he'd find out that, wait a minute, this case really does exist, and it's from my hometown, my home state.
Right.
So, yeah, he really, it was very spiritual for him.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I wanted to make a comment just and get your feedback on this. In the book, he talks about the language for a typical estate planning attorney. He calls it a boilerplate. There are things that people need to be aware of. If you had a whole bunch of money and you were going to leave it and put it in a trust, what points, with all of this that you and the family members have gone through, would you want people to be aware of so that if they're going to have a trust and they're leaving a legacy. Because once you're gone, you're not going to have any choice about anything that's done. How
right.
do you make sure that what you want to put in that trust or in whatever legacy you have is going to go to who you want it to go to?
And John has taught us to be very clear about that. If we want to go to our children, what do we want them, you know, do we want them to use it for education? Maybe each child is different. Maybe we have different relationships with each child. How should the trust be set up for this one as opposed to this one? Be very detailed. And I know when John has clients, he doesn't just bring them in for 1 and 2 hours and give them the boilerplate like you mentioned. He will sit them down and figure out what's going on in their lives and how they want this worded. And I mean, it's got to be so clearly worded. And you're right, at 50, 60, 70 years down the road or more, we don't know. We don't know what's in store for us. And so that's why it's got to be upfront.
Right.
And as best we can do it.
The best you possibly can do it. And that's
right.
the key. That is the key. Now, something that came up too, and this came up after the settlement was agreed upon, there was a bank you were dealing with that had sent the wrong papers, that all of the, that just wasn't done properly. And fortunately, John knew someone at this bank, which is a major national bank, and she knew how to clear all of this up. That to me was very, very interesting, because if you don't have competent people, this estate was being held by this bank, and all the monies were secured within this bank structure. So you have this, and how would an individual know what the right papers were, for heaven's sakes?
Yeah, there'd have to be a lot of trust there with that bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this one particular bank you're talking about, and I think this is what you're telling me, they sent the wrong amounts out. They overpaid
mm-hmm.
us. Yes, they overpaid us. So, yeah, what do you do? You know, we're still sitting on some of this and certainly not moving it around or spending it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Just waiting to find out, let the bank straighten this out. Hopefully it's not too much longer. This is the hard part. So we say it was a 6-year case, but it's still happening. It's still continuing.
Well, what would you say to someone if they have, let's say they're existing in a situation like this, or they're even talking with family members? You know, sometimes people have the good fortune of maybe and getting a whole bunch of money, or their business just takes off and they decide they're going to establish these trusts. One of the things that I've heard from different people through the years is that, depending on where you are, those trusts, if a bank is made the trustee of money, if you don't have the understanding of how to deal with this stuff, that money is held by the bank. You can't touch it. So you've really got to look at a lot of things when you're setting this stuff up.
Yeah, and you better just hope like crazy that the bank knows how to invest this money and will make money for you and not lose it. Yeah, it's got to be a very trustworthy bank. And I would say, I remember my dad did this, and he just developed a really nice personal relationship with the trustee.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the trustee everything that he wanted. And actually, my brother and I, we got his inheritance a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And this worked, and the bank, you know, it was fine. That's an excellent question, Donna, and I would just say get that personal relationship going.
Well, what if that person dies? Then you have some individual coming in that doesn't have a clue.
Yeah.
They may not even have an education about what's going on here. This really is a challenge, because look at the scenarios we've gone through with banks in the past 20 years, savings and loans. All kinds of fiascos that occur with lending institutions. And when you do something like this and you have a trust in place, what is the guarantee that that trust is going to be handled appropriately?
And there probably is not a guarantee.
Aha, there we go.
You
That's
know,
what I
I'm,
wondered.
Well, yeah, like you said, I look over the past years, and look at all the people who gave their money to Bernie Madoff. I mean,
right?
We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. I guess we can just do the best at the time,
and hope that the people with those lending institutions or whatever institution you're with do have integrity. And there's got to be some way that that can be checked on. There has to be some way that people can evaluate that. But I agree with you, developing a relationship, but anymore in banking institutions, it's not like it was when your dad was around.
No.
I mean, I know of banks you can go into, and you may get to know a teller, and 2 weeks later, she's gone.
They're gone.
You don't the way it used to be.
No, it isn't. And I find them, I'm a little older, and I find that, you know, they're wonderful. They're 20-something years old, and I figure, I don't know. It's
mm-hmm.
not that I don't trust them or have confidence, but I guess I want somebody more seasoned.
You want someone with some experience that's been around the block a few times.
Experience
and reputation.
Yeah, and somebody's going to stay there, but like you said, you just don't know if they're going to stick around.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen a lot. This really was a fascinating read, and I think that John, and I'm sorry he wasn't able to join us, but that's understandable. He's in an entirely different time zone, but I do think he has done a marvelous job of representing a profession that is so often viewed with a great deal of skepticism because of so much of activity that is not done in an honorable way. But as an attorney, what he did for you guys and just his work and the people that he associated with were just absolutely amazing.
And he never gave up.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel he felt this was a case of a lifetime.
Yes.
No, he never gave up once.
Now, what is your, do you have a website for this book? I'm sure people can get it on Amazon.com. The name of the book is The Inventor's Fortune Up for Grabs. This is about the legacy of the expansion bracelet and the heirs of that same legacy. What is the website, dear?
Okay, it's www.theinventorsfortune.com, and you can click on, you can order it through Amazon on one of our links, or you can get a hold of us personally. And yes, it is with Amazon, it's with barnesandnoble.com.
Wonderful.
Theinventorsfortune.com.
I think that this is one of the few books out that gives a perspective of how trusts, when they're set up, you need to realize you can't think like a fossil on this because the world is not going to be the same way you're experiencing it now. And you really have to ask yourself, how do you want this to be dispersed? I'll just share something quickly with you. Bill Gates and his wife, they have a foundation that their monies are in. And they set that up so it will be liquidated 50 years after all parties that are invested in this, which is Buffett, Gates, and his wife, after they're gone. Then it will be totally liquidated because they said they realized that too many things can go wrong after a period of time. And of course, they've got billions of dollars that they're putting in there. But your story is fascinating. The Inventor's Fortune Up for Grabs, The Legacy of the Expansion Bracelet. This is about family that ended up going through 6 years of experience. That's a very good read. This is Donna Sebo here. Suzanne, thank you for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And if you want to call in, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. I would be delighted to do exactly that. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, all I need from you again is your first name or your initial, and of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from. And then after that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask a question about anything that may be of significant interest to you to have answered. 888-815-9756. Quick, like a bunny, I want to let you know I'm going to be doing an appearance on March the 26th, which is Saturday, in 2 weeks. I am going to be at the Emerald Spiral Expo, for those of you in the state of Washington, at Kent Commons. And that's in Kent, Washington. The hours will be 9 to 5. If you want to find out more about this wonderful event that is for the family, it's absolutely terrific. I'll be there doing many consultations, but the products, services, and opportunities for interaction with different people there is just marvelous. So bring the family, come along to the Emerald Spiral Expo at Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. Check out their website, emeraldspiral.com. Electric human emanations. Ah, how does that sound to you? Rather stimulating, shall we say? Well, there was a young woman, and this is something that still happens today. Very rarely, thank you very much. But one of the first recorded incidences was in 1895. A young lady by the name of Jeannie Morgan, she was from Missouri, shook hands with a Dr. Ashcraft, and it knocked him unconscious. Her body started emitting high-voltage electricity. She was 14 years old when this started. Whenever she reached for a metal water pump handle, you have to remember, that's how people used to get water, as soon as she touched it, sparks. We've all had the occasion of walking across carpets and touching someone, and, you know, there's that spark that's generated. The animals didn't want her to touch them, and eventually this particular electrical phenomena in her body faded away. Well, in 1967, in Bavaria, there was a young woman who was causing all kinds of electrical problems in the office building she was working in. She'd walk into a room, light bulbs would shatter, phones were ringing without reason, lights would flicker on and off. And many times they'd actually fall out of whatever they had been screwed into. Surrounding plaster fell from ceilings. Paintings would twirl. Wouldn't that be something to see? A painting twirling in circles on the walls. Well, guess what? They didn't want her around. She was fired. Her boyfriend left her because every time she went to the bowling alley with him, the electric scoreboard would just go wacko. Just went absolutely wacko. Only when she was there. Now, in 1985, Jacqueline Priestman of Manchester, England, developed 10 times the normal amount of static electricity in her body. Vacuum cleaners would not work. Irons wouldn't work. Washing machines wouldn't work. The electricity just affected them and blew them to smithereens. Now, whenever she was around a television, channels would change automatically. Also, sparks were seen to come out of wall sockets. Now, in Manchester, Pauline Shaw's body, they tested her, was releasing an extreme of 80,000 electrical volts. Now, you wouldn't think she could even survive going through that, but she did. Fuses in her washing machine would melt. The washing machine door would open and spill water everywhere. Anything that had to do with electricity would just go absolutely crazy whenever she was around. They said they have on record other human electrical anomalies, which included a baby that was born that way. The doctor was shocked delivering this baby boy. There was a two-year-old who set off security alarms in department stores and had X-ray vision. Superman? Well, I guess this kid, I don't know whether he still has it or not. He was no longer a two-year-old, obviously. A 12-year-old who became electric for 2 days after breaking his arms. Watches would stop. Television lights would go bananas whenever he was around. And there is a man, and this is in Ripley's Believe It or Not records, he can light up a light bulb when he holds him with his fingers. And there is another man, and these last two are adults, who are so heavily charged with electricity that walking in cold weather is really, really hard for them. You have the other side of the coin. Now, here we've been talking about people that have electricity emitting from them. Well, other people are negatively affected by electrical energy. One man, it said, has his house wrapped in foil to keep wireless waves out. And a woman developed an electricity allergy after she was struck by lightning and finds that if she walks over roadways or walkways that have buried cables beneath them, it causes pain in her body. The human body is absolutely amazing. And when you read these stories, you may think, oh, this is a bunch of baloney. But it isn't. And we don't know everything about everything. People like to think they do, but we really don't. And electricity has always been around, and until we had the capacity of understanding how to harness it, and in many ways it's a very crude level that we're using, I'm very grateful for it. But electricity is something that's always been here. Energy, that's what we're talking about. And as we become more knowledgeable, we may be able to create and utilize a form of energy where we don't have to use fossil fuels and other things that create contamination. But there is always going to be a way of bringing that energy into focus. But you have to figure out how you're going to do it and what's going to be the safe way. I remember as a kid always listening to the stories about the guys that would go out and work on cables and telephone lines. I remember my grandparents talking about that and how dangerous it was. Do you know it's still very dangerous today? We have men and women that are out working with cables that carry so much energy in them that they have to be very careful about grounding themselves so that they are not electrocuted. There's just so much we don't understand and we don't know as the average layperson. And I just think it's really interesting. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Well, get out a pad of paper and pen and figure out what your life path number is. Now, what you're going to need to do, you need to take the month, the number for your month, like January, that would be a 1. April would be 4. March would be 3. And then you take the date of your birth, and then you take the year of your birth, and you want to add all of those numbers up. Add them up. And if you come up with an 11 or a 22, don't change that. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, or 9, I'm going to give you the interpretation about what your birthday represents as far as your career path goes. What would your dream job be? So add up those numbers, and after the break, then I will give you information on that. But prior to going on break, I thought I would share something with you by a man named John Deere. And I really liked what he had to say. We live in a time that we're experiencing natural disasters that are just horrific. Look at Japan and what those poor people are having to go through. And we've got more stuff that's evolving because of the storm and the earthquakes and just all kinds of things. It's almost incomprehensible, the vastness of the devastation that this country is going through. At the same time, we have wars going on in the Middle East, in Africa. There's always something that's happening. And in my lifetime, this has always been going on. I've never known when it has not happened somewhere on the planet. In fact, I remember someone saying at one time that in most periods of history, there were 22 wars going on across the globe, around the globe. And it just seems to be something that mankind just seems to put themselves through consistently. But John Deere has a different attitude. And this is what he says. The future of humanity is a future of peace. That is our hope. War is not inevitable. Nuclear destruction need not be our destiny. Poverty and global warming can be stopped. We have to envision a new world without war, poverty, or nuclear weapons and work for its coming. That means we need to become people of active nonviolence and move our culture from blindness to vision. Violence to nonviolence, injustice to justice, war to peace. We can do it. But every one of us needs to work for disarmament and justice and become a visionary of peace, a real peacemaker. Now, so many will say, what can I do? Just start right where you are. Walk your walk of integrity, of purpose, of meaning, and you are going to find that that will have its own effect. If you need to be involved in your own community, whatever it is that you want to do, be a part of something. Give in your way what you feel you need to do. Representing integrity in all that you do is a tremendous message to others that you interact with. Trust, confidence, becoming skilled in something that for you is very meaningful. But we must be actively involved. My husband got an email from a member of his family this morning that has a friend that lives in Japan. And this young lady's home, everything has been totally destroyed. I don't know the name of the community, but she said, contrary to what people might think, we're not panicking here. We are all helping each other. And we're working together. We have all lost. So she said, by working together, we're going to be able to get through this. And when I found out about that, I thought how significant that is. She's thousands of miles away. And because of technology, she was able to get in touch with a member of my husband's family relating that information. That tells you that people, when they take where they are and live in the moment, and when they do the best with what they've got, and they don't close themselves off from each other, they're going to be able to have a resolution. It may take some time, but by supporting each other, they're going to be able to see an opportunity for being able to heal the devastation that they have been through. We've got a long road ahead. So we need to remember that, too. Wherever we are, we make a difference by how we conduct ourselves, how we think, and the actions that we exhibit. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a moment. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. When we come back, hey, add those numbers up. We'll tell you about your dream job. Don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss, book and talking book audio are only $19.95, plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Okay, did you write those numbers down and add them up? What is your life path number? Well, let me share this with you. Sue Frederick is a woman that really has a passion about numerology, and she's the one that came up with this information. Now, if your life path number is 1, remember, when you add up the numbers, when you get to the end, if it's a double digit, excepting for 11 and 22, you add them together. So if your life path number is a 1, you're a leader. You are going to be very bold in all that you want to do. You've got lots of ideas, and you're really meant to be a leader in life, and you are pretty demanding of yourself as well as of others. So the best jobs, according to Sue, are teacher, life coach, or motivational speaker, or restaurateur. Now, what if you came up with a number 2? You're a team player. Your kindness and your sociability are just as important as your intelligence when it comes to climbing the career ladder. You really are a team player, and you do your best work, obviously, when you are linked up with other people. Now, what kind of career could be there? Nurse, customer service representative, human resources manager, school psychologist. Again, it's the environment that's going to allow you to be who you are. If you came up with a 3, you're a trendsetter. You like nice things, and you are really creative. You thrive on artistic self-expression, and you love being in the spotlight. Now, what are your best jobs? Well, how about being a florist? Maybe a makeup artist. Maybe a wedding or party planner. A pastry chef. Someone that really, really wants to do the creative aspect. That's who you are, and you do things on your own level. If you're a number 4, you're a logician. Yes, your greatest strengths, perseverance, logic, and attention to detail. You like to be mentally challenged. The more complex things are for you, the better it is. Now, you would do very well as an attorney, an accountant, paralegal, a pharmacist, editor of a magazine, manager, dental hygiene, anything that is associated with a lot of details. Now, if you came up with a number 5, you're an explorer. You are very, very much a person who gets along with just about everybody. You have a tremendous curiosity and a love for adventure. You don't like routines. You like new environments. You like to explore different things. So, how about being a travel agent? Maybe a freelance journalist, photographer, sightseeing guide. Maybe you'd like to fly, but whatever it is, you can do it. Number six, if you are an altruist, you have a tremendous social conscience. That is what is behind anything you want to do. You really like being involved in community environments. You also believe you've got to share compassion with others, and it doesn't make any difference whether the group is large, medium, or small. Being a social worker would perhaps do a great deal for you. Someone who likes being involved in healing, maybe assistant to a physician, a patient representative, maybe even working in the veterinarian area. And there's so many options there for you. A number seven, you're an introspective intellect. You're very analytical, yet you have a deep emotional nature. You're happiest working on projects that require both intuition and intellect. A writer, blogger, librarian, advice columnist, anything that allows you to use both sides of your brain, that's what you like. If you're a number eight, you're the money person. You like nice things and appreciate the best. You don't want to compromise and have less than that. You have very good financial instincts, and you're not afraid of working. You really like to work hard to get whatever it is that you want. So the real estate market, a financial advisor, being a bookkeeper, CPA, marketing professional, you like to work with money, and you can manage it very well. If you're a number nine, you're an idealist. You love being a free spirit. You like creative and community-oriented pursuits that allow you to put your idealism to work. Anything to do with nonprofit is something that you like to be a part of. You would be a great therapist, let's say dealing in art therapy, something like that. You enjoy music. You'd be a great teacher. There's just so many areas that you really need to feel like you are doing the best you can. Now, if the number 11 is your life path number, you're a visionary. Why not is your particular theme. You really inspire about everybody that you meet, and you're drawn to humanitarian work and education. Believe it or not, you'd be a fabulous fundraiser. I don't know if you'd want to go into politics, but that might be something you're very, very good at too. An organizer and a teacher professor. Again, anything that you can do to inspire others to move forward, that's what you're good at. And then the number 22, you're a strategist. If you could be paid for your foresight alone, your brain would automatically get six figures at least. You have tremendously excellent spatial skills. And you are usually ahead of everybody else in your thinking. Architect, artist, person that can do planning. You get the big picture and you can take care of the small details. Quite an interesting association with numbers that are your life path. So I thought I would share that with you today. Now, I know we're just about out of time here. Tomorrow, my guest is going to be Wade Nichols. We're going to be talking, and it's St. Patrick's Day. Ah, yes, it is. The Glamis Cure. And this is a fun story. This is a fiction, and Wade is going to be sharing some wonderful things with us. And don't forget that we're going to be having Dr. Lundell on Friday, The Cure for Heart Disease. This is a fabulous, fabulous physician who has got understanding and attitude about wellness. And in his mind, he's a cardiologist. There is the cure for heart disease, and we can all participate in it. This is Donna Seabold. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never doubt that you make a difference, because you do. What you have to decide is how you want to make a difference. That choice is going to be up to you. Remember, you take yourself wherever you go, so you have the choice to decide whether that is going to be something positive and uplifting, or whether it's going to be isolated and closed. Choose the former. The latter is not much fun. This is Donna Seabold. Wherever you are, have a fabulous day or evening, and we'll be right here tomorrow with you at bbsradio.com. Thanks a lot. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Seabold Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Seabold Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.